Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
As protests following the death of George Floyd continue across the country, NFL players joined many Americans in the Blackout Tuesday movement on social media. Tom Brady, Lamar Jackson, Zach Ertz, and Aaron Donald among those players and teams posting a black box in an effort to show their support. Glad you could be with us for NFL Live. I am Wendy Nix. Ryan Clark is here. So is Mike Tannenbaum and Dan Graziano. Kimberly Martin will join us shortly. Some NFL head coaches are also joining the discussion, hoping to have their voices heard. Sean Payton sent out this tweet earlier this afternoon with photos of Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, who was killed while jogging in Georgia in February. The tweet reads, "We're murdered, not killed on video. How many have we not seen? 22 weeks from today for change," a reference to Election Day. And Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn said this as part of an extensive interview with LZ Granderson of the LA Times. "I don't want to just put a statement out there because it's the right thing to do. I want change. So I guess it starts with having this conversation and talking things out. In 1992, I remember watching LA burn, and here we are in 2020, and I'm watching it again, and it just hit me. Nothing has changed." We are happy to say hello now to LZ Granderson, who recently spoke with the Chargers head coach. And LZ, I'll ask it first. What was that like?
Being here in Los Angeles, and I co-host an ESPN LA radio show with Keyshawn Johnson and Travis Rogers. So we all have very good relationships with all of the head coaches for the Los Angeles area teams. And when Coach Lynn reached out to me and said that he wanted to have a conversation, I drove out to his home. I knew what the topic was going to be about, but I didn't know how wide-ranging it was going to be. And more importantly, I didn't know how open and transparent he was going to be. When you're an African-American head coach in the NFL, you're juggling a lot of balls, some that a lot of fans don't even witness. And so I was concerned that it wasn't going to be an in-depth conversation, but I was shocked to see his candor, to be quite honest with you. He was very forthcoming about his own experiences, about Colin Kaepernick, about how the NFL handled it, and more importantly, about what he thinks needs to happen next in terms of social justice reform. So it was a wide-ranging conversation. It lasted a couple of hours. And it was very eye-opening to see him be that trustworthy of me as a journalist, but more importantly, that transparent to the public at large.
Let's circle back to something you referenced, and that is Colin Kaepernick. What did Coach Lynn have to say regarding the confusion around Kaepernick's message?
Yeah, that was a long conversation. Some of it was off the record, but on the record, I can tell you that he said that he wasn't happy with what occurred, that he said what many of us knew, that Colin Kaepernick, particularly when he was a free agent early after he allowed his contract to expire, was a starting quarterback in the NFL, and that all the attempts to try to break down statistically why he didn't have a job was just bogus, that there were other factors keeping him out of the league and that he was not happy about it. And we talked about how his message perhaps got watered down or bogged down by people with political motives to not want to see the work that he wanted to see happen come to fruition. And he also talked a little bit about the media. And, you know, I've always said that when I was a co-host on Sports Nation for us at ESPN, I talked about the fact that the media's tendency to shorthand what Colin Kaepernick was doing has contributed to the messaging getting lost. It wasn't a protest of the national anthem. It was a protest for criminal justice reform and against police brutality that happened during the national anthem. But because of that shorthand, some of that messaging got lost. Coach Lynn talked about that as well as some other things in regards to how the messaging got diluted.
I know Coach Lynn also held a Zoom call with his players on Monday, obviously trying to have this discussion and to address this head on. What was that like?
It was interesting because he talked about how passionate his rookies were, how much they wanted to talk about what was happening all around them. you know, they're the L.A. Chargers, but they're just outside of L.A. proper in terms of training facilities, where a lot of the players stay and where the coaches stay. And the protests are happening all around the city. And so there's truly no escape from hearing protests right down the street from perhaps where you live or being near where you like to go grocery shopping, things of that nature. And the players wanted to talk about that. They wanted to talk about racism. They wanted to talk about what they can do on the other side. Obviously, they're very excited about football, especially the rookies. They want to get in. They want to get the books. They want to get in front of the coach. They want to play. That's what their dream is. But they also recognize where the country is right now, where this conversation is right now. And this is a very palpable moment that the rookies, in my conversation with Coach Lynn, are very much aware of and want to be a part of.
This may be the most important question I'll ask. What does he suggest we do, or the NFL do, or teams do to move forward?
Well, there are a couple of things. First and foremost, he encouraged police officers, and it's important to note, you know, Coach Lynn has family members who are police officers. He has family members who are veterans, and he has a tremendous amount of respect for first responders. He was in a near fatal accident, a car accident back in 2005, and has his heart open to first responders. But he thought one of the most important things that needed to happen going forward are those quote unquote good cops who stand back and allow those bad apples to ruin the entire bunch. He encouraged them that when you see something wrong, that you say something, that you don't just go along to get along. And he's absolutely right about that as far as I'm concerned. I, too, share a similar passion for patriotism, for the first responders. I talked about that in this piece, about how Coach Lynn and I are bonded by some of that, as well as our spiritual ties. And this tendency of good people not doing anything in the face of evil is quite frankly killing us. And that's what, you know, Coach Lynn said. And you know, I agree with him.
LZ, we look forward to the piece. We appreciate your time and also, of course, to continuing this dialogue. As I mentioned,
thank you for having me, Wendy.
Thank you, LZ. As I mentioned earlier, Kimberly Martin joins us as well now as we continue to have this conversation. Ryan Clark, I'll start with you. What do you believe the next steps should be for the NFL to promote change?
I think, you know, the NFL, you know, they've spoken about the Players Coalition led by Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin. And I know that they put their money towards this. And I think if you look at what Joe Lockhart said in his piece, he talked about Commissioner Goodell pushing for teams to sign Colin Kaepernick and them not necessarily wanting to affect their bottom line. I think it wasn't about affecting their bottom line and more so about if you signed Colin Kaepernick, it was to say that you were on his side of where police brutality meets the black community, that you were on his side on social injustices. And I just don't believe that owners and teams were willing to take that step, were willing to put in risk their political affiliations to say that this country needs a change. And so if you want to show change when your players are out protesting or when your players are out in the communities, where are the GMs? Where are the head coaches? Where are the owners? Are you going to stand side by side with your players saying that these things need to stop? And I believe on the other side of that, we can look at minority hirings. We can look at minority pipelines. The reason that you can get head coaches or the reason that you get GMs or even get owners to speak is because they hold positions of prominence. They hold positions of success. They hold positions that hold weight. And so if you want to have African-Americans to have a voice, if you want African-Americans to have influence, put them in positions of influence or put them in positions where they can earn and get and gain the experience to be qualified for these positions of influence. And when you look on the field and you see these African-American faces or you see these young black people that play this sport, let's show the world that we don't have to put them in the box. Let's show the world that it's not just okay to be black and do this, but you can be black and do anything. You can be black and be treated equal. You can be black and hold positions of intelligence, positions of experience, and positions that make changes in the world. And I think until those things happen in the NFL and we can see those changes and you can see those faces, it's just all talk.
Yeah, I think the NFL, the first thing the NFL has to do is get comfortable talking about the fact that it has an optics issue with Colin Kaepernick not being in the league. It has to be comfortable talking about the police. It has to be comfortable talking about race. It has to be comfortable having difficult conversations and trying to bring about change when it's not comfortable. And I think that's what Colin Kaepernick was trying to show us. You speak about things when, even when it hurts your bottom line. The NFL has shown us that the bottom line is particularly important. The owners have showed us that. But going forward, the bottom line can't be the only thing that the NFL cares about. And if we're to take the statement that Goodell released over the weekend at face value, then we need to see not just financial donations made, because let's be honest, donating money is easy when you're a billionaire. It's about the conversations with players. It's about actively trying to make a difference in the community and supporting your players when they're talking about issues that are 4 years old, 400 years old.
Yeah, and for me, it's all about sustainability. A couple of years ago when the Anthem controversy came up, I was with Miami. A couple of good things came out of it. Some of our players did ride-alongs with police. We had a really good town hall with civic leaders, and things sort of quieted down. And I think what's really important is for the league and the Players Association to work collaboratively, and they have an incredible platform. Obviously, economically, they have all the resources that are necessary. And more importantly, they have this great aura of association where a lot of corporations want to be associated with the league and its players. And what we need is something sustainable. So when the next news cycle quiets down and we move on, we have some sort of lasting programs in place that can make meaningful change. The other thing I like to add is going to the top of the show is I had the privilege of working with Anthony Lynn. I represented him for a short time, and he is an incredible leader. And I thought his piece was really heartfelt. And the fact that he was out protesting, it says a lot about him, and hopefully other coaches and a lot of us around the NFL ecosystem can learn by his example.
I would absolutely second that about Coach Lynn, Mike. They just don't come much better. Kimberly, since we've referenced Colin Kaepernick, that was then, this is now. What has changed?
I think the biggest thing that we're seeing is that more eyes are on the issue. I think COVID-19 has, because we're all in our homes, because these incidents with, from Ahmaud Arbery to George Floyd to the situation in Central Park where you had a woman calling the cops on a black man, all these things in a short period of time are happening in front of people who are at home. They have to watch. They can't ignore. And what we've seen so far is more white players are speaking out. That's something that's changed, in my opinion. That's been something that's been encouraging to see, people who normally haven't used their platform to talk, to wade into the political or social justice reform waters. I think a lot of guys across the league are feeling like enough is enough. How can I be a part of the solution? And talking to players today, you know, a lot of them feel inspired from what we're seeing, from the sense of people want to take not just words, but now actions. Guys aren't just, those who aren't affiliated with the Players Coalition, they're still going out. They're still thinking of ways that they can be active agents of change. And I think there are more players and players who aren't just black talking about this conversation, and they're doing it in a public space. And that's been the real thing I've seen.
Yeah, Kimberly, I definitely get a sense right around talking to people around the NFL and really in society that the environment has changed. You go back to 2016 when Colin Kaepernick started his protests, and people were upset. You know, he's disrespecting the flag, disrespecting the military, even though he made it clear that's not what the protests were directed at. And then 2017, when many NFL players took a knee after the president called them out, people said the same kinds of things, and there really wasn't an ability to have a conversation about the issue that Colin Kaepernick was protesting over. And I think that has shifted a little. I think there's still going to be that angry sentiment to a certain extent. But the people that were shouting, get your politics out of my sports, right now there aren't any sports to watch. And you can't look at your television without getting slapped in the face by politics, by social issues. So I think people right now, because of where we are, because there's no sports on, because everybody's in their homes, as you say, are kind of pointed toward this discussion in a way that they might have been shielded from it 3 or 4 years ago. So if there were NFL games going on right now and there were protests as a result of what's going on and the murder of George Floyd, et cetera, I hope that NFL owners wouldn't, I don't think they'd get to the point, like you're saying, Kimberly, where they're comfortable, but I would hope they wouldn't be quite as terrified of the consequences as they were 3 or 4 years ago when it comes to the idea of allowing players to have their voices and protest while the anthem is playing.
Yeah, I think that without Colin Kaepernick, we aren't at this point. We don't get to this juncture without him raising awareness, without him effectively losing his career because of a peaceful protest. And now when you look at the different protests that are going on, the different athletes that are speaking out, I do think it's a step in the right direction. I think it's a step in the right direction that people are starting to say they at least want to listen. And it's not so much stiff-arming of the concept that there are inequalities in the justice system, that there is systematic racism, that it is institutional racism, that racism is as historic as America is. And so I think when we look at where we all are today, it's about how we move forward. Obviously, I think there's always been a large part of African-American athletes that have shown support or have protested or have done their work in their communities in order to better life for many young black men, many young black women, and people of all races and all colors to have equality, because in the end, that's what this is about, to receive the same treatment, to know that despite our differences, we are all alike and that we are all Americans and we should all be afforded the same freedoms and the same liberties as each of us have been protected from and fought for. And so I think that's where we are going with this. But it can't be about a tweet. It can't be about a statement. It can't be about an Instagram post or social media movement. You have to stand with your brothers. When you say you stand with them, that means stand side by side in those communities. That means stand side by side when you're having the conversations with officers of what is it that people in this community do, that black Americans do, that does frighten you? What scares you? What makes you think it's okay to kneel on them for over 8 minutes, even when they aren't breathing? And I think if we are side by side in action, it means so much more than word. And now owners don't have to fight against it. Owners don't have to be uncomfortable, because when Carson Wentz is a part of the conversation, when Tom Brady is a part of the conversation, when you have Zach Ertz that's a part of the conversation, now we're talking to familiar faces. Right. That there's not going to be an anger. There's only going to be a look for solution. There's only going to be a search for answers. There's only going to be a conversation for clarity and hopefully the players stepping out. And listen, we've been a part of this league when it comes to football. We all know it's about the quarterback's club. When they cross the picket lines, it made things different. If they don't come into work, it'll make things different. And so if they stand with the rest of their brothers in their locker rooms for equality, for justice, right, for us to be on the same wavelength, I believe that the owners have to and they must. But if they don't stand, then it doesn't matter what black voices they have. It's about the entire NFL getting together and saying things must be different.
Ryan, thank you. All of you, thank you. And speaking of owners, Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti on Monday pledged $1 million for social justice reform in the Baltimore area and added that he is shaken by the acts of racism that continue to overwhelm our society. He also said, "There is nothing I can say to ease the pain felt by African-American communities across our country. No words will repair the damage that has been done. Like many people, I am sickened, disheartened, and shaken by the acts of racism that continue to overwhelm our society. The most recent killing involving George Floyd is yet another tragic example of the discrimination that African Americans face each day." We are counting down the top 10 questions heading into the 2020 season. After revealing 10 and 9 yesterday, here's our own Adam Schefter with number 8, our next question.
Question number 8. How will Ben Roethlisberger return from injury? Pittsburgh season and Ben Roethlisberger's elbow unraveled simultaneously last September, with Pittsburgh missing the playoffs for the second straight season.
We got to find a way to win a football game. We weren't able to do that today.
Not the start the Steelers were looking for. Everything will be directed at quarterback Ben Roethlisberger and his condition.
Pittsburgh hasn't missed the playoffs in three straight seasons since drafting Roethlisberger in 2004. Now Roethlisberger is working out with teammates, recovering, and the Steelers hope they do too. It won't be easy. Roethlisberger will be 38 years old this season, and his fellow draft classmate Eli Manning already has exited. The clock is running on Big Ben in a way it rarely has before. Pittsburgh's strength, once again, is its defense, which it will need in a division featuring Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and the number one overall pick, Joe Burrow. But the Steelers really need a healthy Roethlisberger more than anything.
All right, Mike Tannenbaum, I'm not sure you could ever have enough or too many, but would you have brought in another backup quarterback in Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. And the player they should target is still available, Cam Newton. When you look at Ben Roethlisberger, he's 38 years old. He's missed 14 games since the start of the 2018 season. And if I'm the Steelers, a couple of things I learned last year is I do have a great young defense, as Adam alluded to. But those backup quarterbacks, and Mason Rudolph, not good enough. Duck Hodges, not good enough. You traded away an interesting, talented backup quarterback in Josh Dobbs. So you don't have somebody else on campus that could go win games. Cam Newton's only 31 years old. And look at that. You may have the baton from Ben to Cam Newton in terms of your successor without having to give up a draft choice. So I think it's a great opportunity for the Steelers. It bolsters their ability to win for today and could also address a screaming need they have for the future. So if I'm Pittsburgh, I would actively try to sign Cam Newton as soon as possible.
A lot of that makes sense. Ryan, listen, as Mike mentioned, 38 years old, Ben Roethlisberger, a great quarterback. He's a big guy, but he's also been beaten up. Will he win another Super Bowl?
Yeah. Gosh, why you do this to me, Wendy Nix?
Because you're so
of
good.
All days. Now, you know, I look at Ben and you look at this team. I sat with Coach Tomlin in the offseason and he said something to me that both hurt my feelings and made me feel really good. He said, you know what? He said, I almost have the same feeling walking into the stadium that I had when you played. And what he meant by that was he said, the defense could carry us. We just can't turn it over. We just can't mess it up on offense. And now you look at this offense, if you add Ben Roethlisberger back and the way that James Washington was able to play last year, Johnson on the outside, obviously Juju Smith-Schuster healthy. And this team has everything it needs to win. The only problem is, Wendy Nix, there's a guy in his own division named Lamar Jackson who has the Baltimore Ravens, and they're stacked top to bottom. Can they beat them? And then Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback in Kansas City, and I feel like if you started any 21 people with them, that team would have an opportunity to win. So it may not be that the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't good enough to get to a Super Bowl. It may just be that the people that they have to face to get there are just slightly better.
All right, so I was listening, and I'm not sure I heard a yes or a no there. Is that a no? Is that a
it's
no?
It's a
maybe.
I don't want to say no. It's a maybe. I think they're going to be
right,
really good.
Enough.
They're going to be a playoff team, but the other teams are good.
Okay. Oh, boy. Dan Graziano, take the sitting on the fence to the next level, would you? What you got?
Well, I think Ryan makes a good point about the Steelers and competition. I think their division looks very, very difficult. Obviously, the Ravens coming back, a 14-2 team last year with the MVP at quarterback. There's an expectation that the Browns will do better this year than they did last year if they can get everything settled down, get the offensive line a little better. And Cincinnati might be better this year, you know, if Joe Burrow comes in quickly. They did a lot in free agency. So the key thing to remember is you have to get the one seed now. The only team in the conference that gets a bye is the number one seed. It's not going to be good enough to get the two seed like Kansas City did last year. And that one seed is going to be very difficult for a division for a team in a division that might have two or three playoff teams in it. So Pittsburgh has the defense to do it. They have the quarterback to do it as long as he's healthy. But the road, as Ryan pointed out, is going to be difficult.
Yeah, and I agree with what Ryan was saying, too, when you look at the Steelers.
A little bit.
But I agree with what Ryan was saying about how good this defense is. They have a lot of pressure players in their front seven. They added Micah Fitzpatrick. And when you're drafting the quarterbacks in the AFC North, obviously it starts with Lamar Jackson, the reigning MVP. Joe Burrow was the first pick overall. So was Baker Mayfield. So Ben Roethlisberger is 38 years old. They're not dealing from a position of strength at the quarterback position like they were for about a decade.
All right, fair enough, fellas. Again, it's a good question, and you just showed why.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
That catch from a DB's perspective.
Well, listen, it's a nightmare. Here you got Eli, he's rolling out. He's going to look the safety off. He knew before this play that Brandon Carr was out on the island alone with OBJ, but they didn't know who OBJ was. So this ball is flying through, and Brandon Carr was fighting for his life. Then you get the one-hand catch. Your homeboy runs over. He's looking like, oh, man, I can't help you out. OBJ hops up like, are you not entertained? And then people just slow-mo it and slow-mo it and watch it over and over and over again. You are immortalized in Jimbo world. You know what Jimbo is? I think y'all call it You Got Moss. But this wasn't even You Got Moss. He held him. He pulled him. He dragged him down into infamy. He is forever infamous because this is one of the greatest catches of all time.
It's just beautiful. It's seriously, and I mean it, it never gets old. I could watch it over and over, and we do. And Graz, listen, you know, that was a bit of a setback for many different reasons in Cleveland last year. In your estimation, can Odell get back to the success he had in those early days of his career?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, I was covering the Giants his rookie year. I was there the night he made that catch. You know, we were astounded by it, but those of us that were watching him practice every day, when we talked among ourselves, we said, you know, this is kind of what we've been looking at. He always did something crazy in practice. So we were well aware of his abilities. And I think there's, I mean, look, he's 27 years old. He played through some injury last year that he's had taken care of in the offseason. He hasn't really been healthy the last couple of years. I just feel like this is a guy who's driven, who takes it as a slight when someone thinks that there's another one greater than he is in terms of wide receiver. I think he's primed for a big year that reminds us all who he was at the beginning and who he still can be. Just too much talent there for me to believe that it's never coming back to what we saw early in his career.
Yeah, Dan, I see it a little bit different. I think he has a chance to still be a good player. I just don't see the transcendent talent, and here's why. I think they're going to distribute the ball. When you look at what Kevin Stefanski did in Minnesota last year, Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, Cleveland has a lot of weapons. They have two really good backs, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb. They added Austin Hooper with another first-rounder in David Njoku, and, of course, Jarvis Landry with Odell Beckham. So when you look at the way Minnesota played offense last year and what Cleveland has offensively this year, I think Beckham will be productive, but he only had four touchdowns a year ago. And while I see that production going up, I just don't see him playing at that elite level, maybe a notch below that.
Listen, I think he can get back to an elite level. When you look at some of the talent that surrounds this team, and also Kevin Stefanski understanding that this is going to start with the run in Nick Chubb, and OBJ has a different gear. I trained one of the guys that plays for Cleveland now, and he said during the season he would always tell him, I'm only in fourth gear. I can only get to fourth gear. And his question was, well, Dell, how many gears do you have? And he goes, I have eight. And when a player feels that way and he feels like he can't get to his top speed, then that's an issue. So you look at this team. If Nick Chubb gets going, if Kareem Hunt gets going, and they get into that deep play-action pass game, as we've seen with Adam Thielen, as we saw with Stephon Diggs, I believe he can be extremely explosive. And the one thing about Odell Beckham Jr. that is different from a guy like a Michael Thomas or DeAndre Hopkins is that he doesn't need 120 catches to rack up yardage. If he gets the type of quality catches and you can get him between 80 and 100 catches, he can have a huge year with huge touchdown totals. And I think that's where OBJ will be for the Cleveland Browns.
How many gears you have, Ryan Clark, these days?
Man, I don't even have one, Wendy Nix. I'm a jogger.
I don't believe that, but thank you. Early in the show, we looked at the eighth biggest question heading into the 2020 season. Now Shefty's back with the next question in our countdown.
Question number 7. What impact will Philip Rivers have on the Colts? The only sight odder than Tom Brady sporting a pirate on his helmet is Philip Rivers sporting a horseshoe. The franchise that once had Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck steer it now has handed it off to a longtime Charger who turns 39 years old in December and still has to prove his worth to Indianapolis on his one-year contract.
I've expressed publicly, the Colts have shared that sentiment too, that we hope it's more than 1 year, but I think it's 1 year at a time.
Rivers is coming off a season in which he threw 20 interceptions, the third most in the NFL and the second highest total of his career. But he inherits a roster that was supposed to be good enough to give Luck a chance to take it to the Super Bowl. Now it is Rivers' turn to try to get done what he never could in San Diego and Los Angeles.
Including the postseason, Philip Rivers has made 235 starts in his NFL career, the most starts by any quarterback without a Super Bowl appearance. In total, Rivers has made only 11 postseason starts, going 5-6, and hasn't been to a conference championship game since 07. That's clearly the goal in Indianapolis. It's the goal for every team, I guess, Graz. But what does Rivers need to do to get over that playoff hump and make it to the Super Bowl?
Look, Wendy, he's got to protect the ball, obviously, better than he did last year. But I was listening to Adam there, and his question was, what can Philip Rivers do for the Colts? I kind of flip it over as, what can the Colts do for Philip Rivers? If we buy into the notion that Rivers still has the ability to play at a high level and that his protection and his offensive line issues the last couple of years with the Chargers were the problem, well, boy, oh, boy, is that fixed now. He's playing behind one of the best offensive lines in the league. So if he can protect the ball and play, give them competent to excellent quarterback play, it does look like a great spot for him to try and win the Super Bowl at long last before he's all done.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that this team is Super Bowl ready because they get Philip Rivers. I think the team that we were expecting to make a Super Bowl run was with Andrew Luck, who many believe had the stuff to be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. But this does allow them to be prominent in the pass game. They went out, they drafted another running back. They got a number two wide receiver for T.Y. Hilton, and they need to improve defensively. But I think this team is better with Philip Rivers as the quarterback. But to me, they don't compete to go to a Super Bowl. I just don't think they have enough. And only getting Philip Rivers to add to that doesn't make this team a Super Bowl contender.
All right, guys, thank you. We'll pick it up with question number. Oh, you know what? I'm trying. Mike, I've done this to you before. I try to cut you off. You go.
All good. I agree with Ryan, but it's because of the other side of the ball, Ryan's old position at safety. Their secondary is really leaky. They really struggled last year on third down, passing yards given up, and I'm not sure if they addressed that enough. So while Phillip Rivers may help their offense, that defense will certainly keep them from competing for the Super Bowl.
All right, before I interrupt anyone else, are we good? Anyone? Anyone? Okay. Fair enough. Now, I tell you this, then we'll do question 6 tomorrow. I might even let everybody weigh in. DeSean Jackson has a suggestion. If there aren't any fans in the stands when the NFL season resumes, mic up all the players. That got us thinking. What are some of the best mic'd up moments we've heard?
I'm trying to drive a Bentley today.
Every single play, every game's our Super Bowl.
We're going to go right down this field. We're going to freaking score.
Bro, where is my money?
Ooh. I ain't going to lie. That tackle hurt.
I've been looking at my mama this whole game.
Oh, spicy nuggets are back. I might have to stop on the way home.
I'm dying out here. Give me a cheeseburger and some waffle fries.
Where is my mama?
Hey, I'm looking for my mama, bro. I can't see her.
Lick your gloves.
Oh, yeah, you about to get it. You about to get it right there.
You about to get this.
No, don't say that. I'm not scared of you.
What up, little beast mode? I'm big beast mode.
I found my mama.
Hi, Mom. Say hello to Mom. Say hello to Mom, damn it.
Hi.
Hey, Mom.
Hey, it's our chance to take over.
Right now.
We're going to have to take over.
Don't take this thing over, man.
Do you want some of that? Yes, you do.
Hey, you unbelievable.
No, you unbelievable.
Hell no.
You inspire me, cuz.
One play at a time, do something special.
Let's go!
Hey, show me what champions do.
Well, it is always interesting. And Mike Tannenbaum, I have to ask you, you had the distinct pleasure of working with Rex Ryan. Please tell me you didn't mic that man up.
Yeah, I would say you can take all the players in the NFL. I'll take Rex. There's some great vintage footage from Hard Knocks. You want entertainment? Just listen to Rex.
Fair enough. We love him, though. Love you guys, too. See you tomorrow.